Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. Come on home, baby. And now, your host, Gary Null. Oh, come
on home. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how physical activity is linked to lower death risks in men with localized prostate cancer, how diet will influence your gut bacteria more so than your genes. Also, from Boston University, older adults who have greater heart and lung health also have greater memory recall and cognitive capabilities. Fast food consumption is linked to a lower test score gains in eighth graders, and much more on health and healing. Then from our environmental segment, the Fukushima Endgame, the radioactive contamination of the Pacific Ocean, from Global Research Professor Michael Choskadosky. Also today, we're going to have a discussion on widespread hunger and poverty are predicted unless strategies are developed to cope with the drop in crop yields because of climate change. I think this is one of the most single important issues facing us, water and food. Now, a lot of people take both for granted. And in some areas, you have plentiful water, not only now, but for hundreds of years. But what about the 27 states, more than half the United States, that does not, that's in severe drought? So they're going to get worse, not better. And also, what about with global warming and these giant dust storms and now sand storms, what historically we had seen in Saudi Arabia and Jordan and other places in the Middle East, we're now seeing in our own West, sand. Now, there's a difference between when dust hits you, because you can clean out from dust. It's bad for the lungs, and it makes everything gritty. But when you get a sandstorm, it just rips the paint off your house. It can hurt you. It can kill crops. It can kill animals. That's the new norm. In fact, the largest sandstorm ever seen in the United States happened recently in Phoenix. Phoenix is a dead city. Last place in the world anybody should live, because it has no future. When I say no future, it is a zombie city. And yet people are moving there like crazy. Why? We'll discuss it. So think about what happens when we run low on crop yields. Let's say 15 to 20% because there was enough water or because there was too much water and destroyed and rotted out the seeds. Well, you'll start to see it around the world first because we won't have the crops to export to hungry people. Then you'll start seeing conflicts in those areas. Then you'll start seeing abandonment of farms all across the United States. I predict that we will lose between 1 to 3 million fertile acres in the next 10 years. So, food and water. If you want to get ahead of the curve, make sure that you are with a place that has your own food capabilities and water. Pillaging the World, the History and Politics of the International Monetary Fund. And separately, Bill Gates' human experimentation with GM bananas in Africa, condemned by scientists. My guest in the second part of our program will be Ray McGovern. We're going to talk about the case of CIA analyst John Kirakawa and the Senate torture report. Ray McGovern served as an Army intelligence officer and a CIA analyst under seven presidential administrations, from JFK to George Bush. And his duties were preparing the president's daily brief. That meant that he knew what was going on from all intelligence agencies all over the world every day. So to have that kind of insider give us a perspective is unique. So he's going to give us his insights. I think you'll find him of interest. Also, we will have on the Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 p.m. tonight, we'll have couple really heavy hitters, and I will tell you about them a little later on in the show. Let's begin. We know that diet impacts the bacteria in the body. Now, it's only recently, let's say in the last 3 to 5 years, that people have been paying more attention. But what you generally find is those individuals who have been using fermented foods like miso or sauerkraut or a kefir or yogurt, they'll continue to do that and simply say, hey, that's pretty cool. I was on the right side of that call. But for the average American, we have not seen any movement for them to give up a bad diet and embrace a good diet, unless they've been faced with a life-challenging illness and their doctor has ordered it, and then they will do it. But not always the way they should. But for all of you who care about your health and have no problem incorporating something new and vital that could really make a difference, this is good news. It's from the University of California at San Francisco, and it's published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell, Host, and Microbe. And what they found is, in this new Nature versus Nurture study, the link between gut microbes, what are called bacteria, and health, they conclude that diet has a stronger influence than your genes in determining the mix of bacteria in the gut. And that's really important, and more studies are revealing the important role that your gut bacteria play in your health. Now, there are trillions of cells, vastly outnumbering what most people could even perceive. But there are tens of trillions of bacteria. You have 10 times more bacteria in the body than you have cells. Now, if you're eating a good diet, and if you're not stressed, and if you're trying to be conscious of the quality of the liquid you consume, like water, then most of those bacteria are going to be friendly, and that helps you digest your food, and it also competes against pathogens that can cause disease and inflammation. So when you have good bacteria, it will overwhelm the bad bacteria, and healing will commence. But the mix of gut bacteria varies considerably from person to person and over a period of time. And until now, it has not been clear whether this variation is due mostly to genes, which is nature, or things we can change, which is nurture, such as diet, lifestyle. And they're saying, yes, we all have genes, and those genes have some predetermined qualities, but the choices you make, positive choices every day, that can supersede the gene, and that's good news. Because it means then you're no longer limited by something that you felt helpless because you were born with a particular gene. Now, in the generation that many of us listening right now, myself included, baby boomers, we were told with absolute authority by everyone, scientists and physicians, that you really had no control over anything. Whatever you had in your gene, that was it for life. We were also told that you couldn't grow a new brain cell, a new heart cell. Both are wrong. You can. We were told you couldn't reverse the aging process, nor could you even slow it down. Both are wrong. You can. And so virtually all the old science and all the old medicine should be challenged and correct what is inappropriate or not meaningful. So today, the whole science of lifestyle modification and behavior modification, which go hand in hand, shows that a positive thought, eating positive food, ends up positive bacteria, and that turns off inflammation, that helps better digestion, helps better assimilation, prevents bad bacteria, prevents candida and yeast overgrowth, bad breath, smelly bodies. All that is due to the bacteria. Healthy bacteria, healthier sweat. So, some ways to get started. Let's say that you have, and I'd like to do this just as a challenge. Anyone in the audience right now listening, worldwide, who has GERD, probably because of a lot of coffee, one of the worst things in the world you can take, is one of my top 10 worst foods, coffee. And because it really plays havoc with the antibiotic catabolic balances, pH balances in the body. If you have ulcers, if you have itises, ileitis, colitis, spastic colon ulcers in the GI tract, diverticulitis, I'm just going to ask you to make a simple dietary correction. For 1 month, no alcohol, no meat, no fried foods, no sugars for a month. On the other end, you can have any variation that you want of living foods, but you must each day have the following. You must have 10 billion, that's with a B, billion, living probiotics, generally by capsules, fine, and one glass of cabbage juice. If you have ulcers, two glasses. And at the end of a month, I'd like for you to call in on the show. I'll set a day aside, and let's see if you can see changes. All right? So that's our challenge for the day. Now, we should all be engaged in physical activity, ideally 6 days a week, aerobically, and always loosen up. Don't just start off fast. Let your body stretch. Get your muscles stretched. Yoga's a good way of stretching. And then take your pulse. Make sure that you know what your resting pulse is. Then make sure that as you're going, you stop in the middle of your workout and test your pulse again so it's not excessive. And then when you finish, give yourself 5 minutes of cool down so you just don't come to an abrupt stop. You do negative splits, meaning you start off slow and you get faster. And then when you start to stop your workout, you do positive splits. You get slower. And now the newest institute, of Karolinska Institute, shows that if you do this, if you're a man, you really lower your risk of dying of prostate cancer. This was published in the journal Cancer Epidemiology and Biomarkers and Prevention. Now, according to the American Cancer Society, approximately 233,000 new cases of prostate cancer will be diagnosed this year, and 30,000 men will die from it. So we're talking about something very serious. So this exercise helps reduce that substantially. Just exercise. We're not talking about diet or supplements, other things we know will impact it. So let's exercise, if you're a man, to protect your prostate and your life. Also from Boston University, older adults who have greater heart and lung health also have better memory recall and cognitive capabilities. This was published in the Journal of Gerontology, and it just showed that the more cardiovascular fitness that you have, the greater your memory and brain. And it just makes sense, and here's why. When you're exercising, you're increasing first your pulse. It's going up. But then when you stop exercising, it comes down and goes below what it normally would be. Let's say your resting pulse is 75 or 80, and that's about normal for most Americans. And let's say after a month of exercising for an hour a day, power walking or jogging or biking, now your resting pulse is 60. You realize you just added about 10 quality years of life onto your heart and your lungs. So anything that's increasing circulation, you're increasing nutrients to the cell. And your microcirculation, especially in the brain, you're also better able to take, cleanse the detoxifying process mechanisms, get the bacteria that's dead out of the body, get cells that are dead out of the body. So it just speeds up cleansing. And of course, in this whole process, you are living a longer life. That's what this study shows. And finally, from Ohio State University, kids love fast foods because we have both encouraged them to eat it and allowed them to be exposed to advertising that has made them believe that somehow they're entitled to it, and if they don't get it, they're going to rebel. Well, there are a lot of ways of dealing with that. I'm not going to deal with that today, but I will deal with that on an upcoming program where I'll show you how to start the weaning process. In fact, I'm doing an experiment starting in a couple weeks where a typical New Yorker who is not a typical New Yorker, a typical successful New Yorker, a former CEO of a major company, branded company, everyone would know in this audience, and a successful husband. He's kind of like a hippie. And she's a total business person. They adopt some kids, and then the kids become so hyper because the amount of sugar and garbage they eat, and they want to feed them healthy, but they don't. So what I'm doing is I want to do this as an experiment. I'm going to see that each day the family is given for 3 months all the juices, smoothies, and food, including the brown bag lunches to go to school. And I will do that, providing that they do not cheat at all. Not even one grain of sugar. But then the question is, what if they, when they go and there's pizzas and there's hot dogs? And fine, you can make a healthy pizza. You can even make a raw food pizza that no one would know is not a regular pizza. So based upon the success of that, and there's blood workups and complete physical medical analysis before and then after to show the difference in the children's behavior. If I'm right, the children won't be bouncing off the walls. They won't be screaming every millisecond. They will be much calmer, much more focused. They'll lose weight. The parents will be healthy. They'll all do it together. So I understand the challenges if someone's already addicted to bad food to get them off. But we can do it. And here's this study showing why we should do it. This was done at Ohio State University. It was published in Clinical Pediatrics. Quote, the amount of fast food children eat may be linked to how well they do in school. You think? Wow, Ohio State, the Buckeye State. You finally figure that out? Gee whiz. Welcome to the real world 40 years late. I forgot it's Ohio State. Researchers found that the more frequently children reported eating fast foods, fifth grade, the lower their growth in reading, math, and science test scores by the time they reach eighth grade. Any high school teacher worth anything in America could have told you that. In fact, you don't have to be a teacher to know that. Just ask any parent that pays attention to what a child eats and how they behave. Get the junk food out. Get healthy food in, and you can make healthy food very tasty. Now, on to the environment. That I'm really concerned about several things, and this is a report from Climate Network News. Tim Radford, quote, new research predicts that climate change will transform agriculture with a drop in yields of up to 18%. Wow, 18%? If you multiply that across the globe, you're going to have, that's an average. If you look at how many places won't be able to grow anything because of climate change and how densely populated those areas are, then you're looking at more realistic figures of somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% in some countries. That's a lot of starving people. That's billions and billions of starving people. And people in the United States who are very wealthy, you'll be able to afford the food that is grown. There'll always be food grown. It's just not everybody will be able to afford it. So what do we do? What's the solution? The problem is facing us. I suggest that we no longer trust on any level our government and bureaucracies ever, because they are so completely psychopathic, dysfunctional, self-serving, duplicitous. They're corrupt to the core, and the entire legions of inner infecting viruses that are part of it. I have such contempt for all that we have become, and we've done it both bipartisan support and lunacy. So, me, I don't listen or look or trust anything ever unless I challenge it, because I know how much people lie about everything, and especially if they are caught in an embarrassing situation or having to acknowledge a wrongheadedness of a report or a program or whatever it is. So what do we do? Simple. It's absolutely elementary. Start to learn simple self-sufficiency homesteading with biodynamic and hydroponic gardening. You can do it on a rooftop. You could do it in a backyard. You can do it in a community garden. Or if you have a farm, you could do it on a larger scale. You could feed your family easily by yourself. But if you did it as a home-based business, you could also do it by having, well, let's say 1 acre. If you had a 1 acre hydroponic and aquaponic done correctly, you could also feed more than 100,000 people. So it's doable. It's inexpensive. My suggestion is start the process of learning how to do it, because the day is going to come when a lot of people are going to wish they had. And if you're the person that does it, gets out ahead of it, then you have time to start small, learn, make some mistakes, learn from that. And then one day, you're providing all the food that you need for yourself and other people. Now, if 1 million people did that, think of how many people would benefit from it. And I think that the likelihood is that we're going to have 1 million younger people who see the truth of the American dream, see how they've been manipulated and lied to from the college. You got to get that degree. You don't, unless it's one of a specialty of 16 specialty areas. But for 38 areas where kids are going to school, you have no job. All you have is debt when you get out, and they stack the system against you. Once again, if they cared for you, they would have forgiven all that debt, let you start, but they don't care about you except as a commodity. So understand something. You have to... I guess in America, we have to have, each one of us, a magic number. What is the number of times you have to be lied to, manipulated, before you finally wake up and see something for what it actually is? For some people, it's infinity. You'll go to your death believing that these people are just stupid, but they're not with bad intent. Yeah, they've got bad intent. Greed is a bad intent. So start the process of becoming self-aware of homesteading. I'm going to be doing a lot of programs on this over the next several months as a public service. Now, here's a figure that's interesting, and this is one more reason to show you why, since I read so much every day from all over the world, and we repost more progressive articles than any other site on the planet every day, and that's why almost 250 million reads in the last 11 months alone. Quote, $14 million an hour, every hour, every day, every year since 9/11, 2001. $14 million an hour, that's how much we spend on preparing for war or engaging in war. Think of what we could have done with those trillions of dollars. We could have completely rebuilt our entire infrastructure in the United States. We could have built forests. We could have reinvigorated the entire small farm movement. We could have upgraded all of our public schools. And yet we didn't spend any money on that stuff, because it wasn't in the interest of those who wanted to exploit us. $14 million an hour, and counting, every single hour. And how long is this projected to go on? It will at least go on, no matter who's in power. We'll be spending $337 million a day in the military-industrial complex for the next 10 years, minimum. Wow. And if they just cut food stamps, cut benefits for the poor. Shows you something about priorities, doesn't it? Now, for Bill Gates, this is the latest on Bill Gates. This is from Ethan Huth, Natural News. Quote, at least 124 food and outreach organizations, as well as 26 individual scientists, have signed on to a letter sent to Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation protesting ongoing human trials of genetically modified beta-carotene-enriched bananas intended for Africa. the GM bananas, which never underwent animal trials, are currently being administered to 12 students attending Iowa State University, presumably without full disclosure as to the many unknown risks involved. According to the letter, the trials are taking place under the guidance of Dr. Wendy White, an associate professor of food science and human nutrition. Funding for the trials came from a grant issued by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Quote, "We, the undersigned, representing diverse constituencies from across Africa and the world, working towards food sovereignty, are strongly opposed to the human feeding trials taking place at Iowa State University involving the so-called genetically modified super banana." Now, prior to landing in Iowa, the transgenic bananas were spawned at the Queensland University of Technology in Australia, also with funding from the Gates Foundation. The goal all along has been to eventually force these frankenfruits on Uganda and other countries in East Africa. But there is still no evidence that GM bananas are safe. Most independent research to date suggests that GMOs can induce allergies, trigger autoimmune disease, and cause cancer, especially after many years of consumption. Quote, "Numerous health problems increased after GMOs were introduced in 1996, explained the Institute of Responsible Technology. Quote, "The percentage of Americans with three or more chronic illnesses jumped from 7% to 13% in just 9 years. Food allergies skyrocketed, and disorders such as autism, reproductive disorders, digestive problems, and others are on the rise. Another major concern with the Gates Foundation GM bananas is that they are a functional food designed for complete human consumption. They are substantially different from GM corn and soy, for instance, which contain modified traits and aren't consumed directly. Quote, "Unlike current GM crops and commercial production, where agronomic traits have been altered, scientists have spliced genes into GM banana to produce substances for humans to digest. The GM banana is a whole different ballgame, raising serious concerns about the risks to African communities who would be expected to consume it. Production of vitamin A in the body is complex, not fully understood. If addressing vitamin A deficiency is really Bill Gates' concern in all this, then why not just send vitamin A capsules, or how about just giving them the capacity to plant sweet potatoes and carrots? There you get a lot of, you know, a lot of vitamin A." So instead, Bill Gates, not surprising, is pushing for an untested banana with altered vitamin A levels to be forced on rural Africans who already have access to all the naturally vitamin A rich foods they could possibly want. The real goal may have to do with the Gates' other admitted agenda, which I've discussed on many occasions. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break, come back with our guest. Please stay with us.
Woman and everything you own. Law of average plainly states that chances go around. But if you want to know the truth about it, I tell you what's pulling you down. Yeah, you got bad luck. Yes, sir. Bad luck. Yeah. Bad luck. You got bad luck. That number's hot, but the bookies get you for every cent you've got. Walk around in a daze with your pockets fat. Go to see a woman and she ain't even there. Ain't wisdom, know your track of time. The more I think about it, I think you're about to lose your mind. Some people call it jinx, some say it ain't my day. But if you wanna know the truth about it, I tell you what's putting you.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Just have a little program announcement. I believe that we should have forums for remarkable minds. And on our Progressive Commentary Hour, we have Dr. Rupert Sheldrake. He is the British biochemist and plant physiologist who experimented with innovative field theory in plants and animals, including humans, to account for the causative formation of the deeper structures of biological development and collective consciousness. And so we're going to be having him on with Reverend Matthew Fox. Now, Reverend Fox, wow, he is quite simply one of the most progressive theologians and spiritual visionaries today. And in fact, he was the founding theologian behind what is called creation spirituality, an ecumenical and inner spiritual theology that posits life as an original blessing. And so we'll have those two together. And I thought, what would be an interesting topic? And Rupert Sheldrake said, I know the topic, the physics of angels, a postmodern dialogue between science and spirituality. Good enough. That will be one terrific show. Then following that, we have Chris Hedges, who needs no introduction, and Professor Andrew Harvey, who is one of the world's greatest religious scholars and teachers. And he is the founder of the Institute of Sacred Activism. And he's from Oxford University, and they're both going to be on talking about a new view of that which is spiritual and using your spirituality as a form of activism. In other words, how to achieve greater social justice at a higher level spiritually. So, two really interesting people. So, that's what's coming at you. Now, let's go down to Northern Virginia. We're standing by is Ray McGovern. I mentioned earlier his bio about how he served 7 presidential administrations, and he was responsible for the one-on-one to the President Ronald Reagan's most senior national security advisors. And so he had decades within the CIA and the national security apparatus. And he holds degrees from Harvard and from Fordham and Georgetown Universities. His website is raymcgovern.com. And you can also read his work on consortiumnews.com. Nice to have you with us today, Ray.
Thank you.
It's my understanding that in all the American history, only 10 people have been charged and found guilty of espionage. And 7 of those 10 cases have been under President Obama's watch. Now, among these 7 is CIA analyst John Kirikawa, who told the truth about the CIA's involvement in torture, in particular waterboarding, although the espionage charges were later dropped in return for his pleading guilty to other violations regarding classified information given to the media. So here we have the case of the imprisonment of someone who whistleblew about torture, who never tortured anyone himself, who was correct about the recent Senate report on torture, what it revealed, and yet those who did engage in torture and killing people, murder, in violation of international laws, and those who ordered and condoned torture from the highest levels of the U.S. government are not held accountable at all. And moreover, anyone who turns whistleblower based on humanitarian values is deemed a traitor to the nation and a tool for the enemy. I'd like to hear your views about this, what I consider blatant hypocrisy, and what is the message about the U.S. that it sends to the rest of the world?
Well, Gary, the message it sends to the rest of the world is that we're no better than anyone else. As a matter of fact, with respect to torture, we're among the worst. When President Obama gets up and says in a plaintive tone, is that who we are? We torture people and we keep them at Guantanamo and we drone strike them? Is that who we are? As though, you know, he's sort of a middle schooler somewhere in Oklahoma learning about what our country has done. I mean, he's the President of the United States. He gave these people a get-out-of-jail-free card as soon as he came into office. So, yeah, hypocrisy, I guess I would say, very reluctantly, but the only way to say it is that he's giving hypocrisy a bad name. Now, with respect to John Kiriakou, I've been up to visit John, in the correctional facility in Pennsylvania. He's in there with a bunch of people who have violated children and all kinds of folks that really do deserve to be in a prison like that. He's holding his own, and with some luck, he'll be out of there in a couple of months. But what a terrible thing that happened to the first fellow, and this is the most important thing. He was the first fellow to confirm that torture was a policy approved at the highest level of our government, and not just the acts of a bunch of rogue agents, the so-called rotten apples at the bottom of the barrel. That's why they went after him. You can't say that. Well, now you can, because after a five-year investigation, those very courageous staffers working for Dianne Feinstein found out, worse than any of us actually could believe, the practices that were instituted and practiced, the practices that were blessed by elements in the Justice Department, and the fact that the CIA folks lied about it, not only to the Justice Department, not only to the Congress, sometimes to the President himself. So the characterization of what happened in this summary of this 6,000-page report, the summary runs to, I think, 500 pages or so, is just devastating. And the notion that no one except John Kiriakou, who was the one that reported that this went to the highest level of our government, no one has been penalized in any way. As a matter of fact, many were promoted. So I see some hope now, and it's not just the Christmas season, Gary. The New York Times came out with a blistering editorial. Finally, better late than never, saying this can't stand. We need to prosecute whoever's responsible. They start with Cheney, but last time I checked, and I remembered President Truman, he famously said the buck stops here, and that was not while he was vice president. That was when he was president. So, sure, it's a very electrifying, it's a very dicey moment for everyone, especially for Obama, because it is really up to Obama now to, I'll try to avoid vulgarisms. He needs more spying, okay? And if he cannot act now in a judicious manner and do what he pledged to do with a solemn oath to the Constitution, namely to see that the laws of the country are faithfully enforced. If he can't do that, then we need to build that fire underneath him that he famously said he needs before he can do anything, and just make him do it. And that's going to take perhaps putting our bodies into it. It's going to take getting out and realizing that what Dr. King said so long ago is true. There is such a thing as too late, and this is getting close to that time.
Ray, the Senate report on torture reveals much more than we knew earlier. Would you please outline the more disturbing revelations that came from this report?
Well, one of the things that, before I forget to mention, which helps people understand why torture was pursued with the virulence that it was, after 9/11, as we know from several people, including Richard Clark, who was working in the White House and who saw the president the following evening, the president taking him aside into an empty room and saying, was it Saddam Hussein? Was it Iraq? And Clark, in his book, confesses to be completely befuddled. He said, no, Mr. President, as I told you yesterday, it was Al-Qaeda, and they have nothing to do with Iraq. And the president's all alone, okay? He's roaming around in the White House sit room on the evening of September 8th, okay? And so so Clark says, well, Mr. President, would you like me to look again? He said, yeah, look again. Make sure you make all the stuff. And then the president leaves. At that point, some of Clark's subordinates come in, and they look, and they say, my God, what just happened here? And Clark says, oh, the president is after Iraq. So it was very clear the day after. Now, what did they need to do that? Two things. They had to womp up a story about Iraq suddenly getting weapons of mass destruction. And this would have been an impossible task, Gary, were it not for the fact that the way was prepared very, very nicely by the media. Most people have no idea that before 9/11, namely on February 22nd and on July 29th of 2001, Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, and Condoleezza Rice, the Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, said almost identical words, we have been able to keep Saddam Hussein's arms from him. He's not a threat to the United States. He's not even a threat to his immediate neighbors, end quote. Well, Condoleezza Rice, 29th of July. 6 weeks later, 9/11, you've heard it said many times, Gary, after 9/11, everything changed. We were being asked to believe that weapons of mass destruction sort of wafted down like manna from heaven for a soft landing on the sand of Iraq where God made that terrible mistake of putting our oil, okay? Now, you can't get weapons of mass destruction in a couple of months, okay? So that was the first lie. Now, the second lie was even more sinister. At the time that we attacked Iraq, 69% of the American people believed that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11. Now, how did that happen? Well, we went around trying to find, the people that worked for Rumsfeld, and I'm sorry to say CIA Director George Tenet, were commissioned to find out why it was that Saddam Hussein was training al-Qaeda in weapons of mass destruction, namely chemical and biologic weapons and explosives. Why was he doing that? And the question, of course, was patently obvious. He wasn't doing that, but what they were after was people who would tell us that, because then they could identify al-Qaeda with Saddam Hussein and, by implication, 9/11. Okay, now how'd that happen? Well, you know, torture doesn't work if you want reliable information. And I probably should say this right off the bat, that on the same day that the President of the United States bragged about what he called an alternative set of procedures, end quote, and later became known as enhanced interrogation techniques, on that same day, the head of Army Intelligence, and I'm very proud of this because I was an Army Intelligence officer myself, the head of Army Intelligence, Lieutenant General John Kimmons, got up 3 hours before he knew what Bush was going to say, and he said, and I quote, no good intelligence has ever come from abusive practices. History shows that, and the empirical experience of the last 5 years, comma, hard years, comma, also demonstrates that, period, end quote. Okay, 5 years, it was 2006, minus five, 2001 when they started. Okay, why do I mention that? Because it is universally recognized, despite all these theories and despite these TV programs and films, that torture doesn't yield reliable information. So it doesn't work, except, now, Gary, if you want unreliable information, if you want somebody to, quote, confess, end quote, to sending agents up to Baghdad from al-Qaeda to be trained in weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, and explosives, you know, you can do that by interrogation, by abusive interrogation techniques. And that's precisely what happened. This fellow, Alibi, who was had some connection with travel arrangements for al-Qaeda operatives, they caught him, and they said, oh, no, okay, now tell us all about how many people you sent up to Baghdad to get trained. And he looked at him, and he says, huh, what, who, why? Tell us. Well, they couldn't get him to tell them. And so what they do? they send them down to Egypt. And now Egyptians have more experience with enhanced interrogation techniques, and they got him to, quote, confess to having done precisely that. 3 days later, the President of the United States, October 7, 2002, got up before the American people and says, now we have proof. We have a source that has told us that Saddam Hussein is indeed instructing al-Qaeda in weapons of mass destruction. And then, you know, after that, Colin Powell used the same information on the 5th of February, 2003, in that famous UN speech to, you know, to his, like, if we have to point out that Powell didn't know that that came from torture at the time he said it. Now he knows, and now everyone knows, because Alibi, as soon as he got free, he said, you know, I only told him that so he'd stop torturing me, okay? So all I'm saying here is that, talk about cynicism, talk about giving lies a bad name. Well, you know, torture did work in this respect, because American people, as I said before, 69% of us were fed this line by the major media, which uncritically accepted all these things, and sort of thought, yeah, this is great, shock and awe, yeah, shock the pants off them, you know, look what they did to us. So instead of appealing to our better instincts, Gary, we saw a base appeal to our more primitive vengeance. Vengeance is mine, says Bush and Cheney. That's not what I read in the Bible.
Anthony Romero, executive director of the ACLU, and Kenneth Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch, put out this statement this morning, quote, failure to conduct a comprehensive criminal investigation would contribute to the notion that torture remains a permissible policy option for future administrations, undermine the ability of the United States to advocate for human rights abroad, and compromise Americans' faith in the rule of law at home, end quote. Now, I'm going to ask you to address this not from your background, which is deep in intelligence and analysts, but rather as a person who also spends so much of your time in deep reflection from a spiritual perspective. What does it say about the majority of Americans who were polled and believe that torture is acceptable, and so many of them within the Christian community, a disproportionate percentage of people believe that torture is acceptable, and what you do to another person that you perceive as your enemy is acceptable, and how does that fall in alignment with basic Christian values, since so many of the people that hearken to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Fox Network and the conservative agenda wrap religion around them and then now say it's all right. And before you answer that, I want to read this short letter that I was asked to read because I believe this is important in relationship to the answer. This is from Maid Reed McGuire, Nonviolence and the Lost Message of Jesus. Quote, I recently visited Assisi, the home of St. Francis and also St. Clair, two great spirits whose lives have inspired us and millions of people around the world. St. Francis, a man of peace, and St. Clair, a woman of prayer, whose message of love and compassion and care for animals and humans and the environment comes down through history to speak to us in very relevant and inspirational ways. Today, in the 21st century, as we the human family face increasing violence, we are challenged to admit that we are on the wrong path and that we need to find new ways of thinking and doing things from a global perspective. Peace is a beautiful gift to have in life, and it is particularly treasured by those who know violent conflict, war, famine, disease, and poverty. I believe that peace is a basic human right for every individual and all people. Love for others and respect for their rights and human dignity, irrespective of who or what they are, no matter what religion or none that they choose to follow, will bring about real change and set in motion proper relationships. With such relationships built on equality and trust, we can work together on so many other threats to our common humanity. For the first 300 years after Christ, the early Christian communities lived in total commitment to Jesus' nonviolence. Sadly, for the last 1,700 years, Christian mainline churches have not believed, taught, or lived Jesus' simple message, love your enemies, do not kill. Poverty is one such threat, and Pope Francis challenged us to take care of the poor and has declared his desire that the Catholic Church be a church of the poor and for the poor. To meet this challenge, we can each ask ourselves, how will I be able to help the poor? Pope Francis also spoke about the need to build fraternity amongst the nations. This is important because building trust among people and countries will help bring peace to our interdependent, interconnected world. Violence begets violence, as we witness every day on our television screens. So the choice between violence and nonviolence is up to each one of us. However, if we do not teach nonviolence in our educational systems and in our religious institutions, how can the choice be made? In conclusion, I believe that all faith traditions and secular societies need to work together and teach the way of nonviolence as a way of living, also as a political science and means for bringing about social and political change wherever we live. A grave responsibility lies with the different religious traditions to give spiritual guidance and a clear message, particularly on the question of economic injustice, armed resistance, arms, militarism, and war. As a Christian living in a violent ethnic political conflict in Northern Ireland and caught between the violence of the British Army and the Irish Republican Army, I was forced to confront myself with the question, do you ever kill? And is there such a thing as a just war? During my spiritual journey, I reached the absolute conviction that killing is wrong and that the just war theory is, in the words of the late Friar John McKenzie, a phony piece of morality. I became a pacifist because I believed every human life is sacred and we have no right to kill each other. When we deepen our love and compassion for all of our brothers and sisters, it is possible no longer to torture or kill anyone, no matter what they may be. Your thoughts on that in conjunction with this whole idea of torture and keeping the argument strictly at the level of, well, if someone knew that there was a nuclear explosion going to happen, wouldn't it be right to go ahead and torture them in any way you wanted? Could you address that, please?
Sure, Gary. There's a lot of meat there. How much time do I have?
Unfortunately, we only have a few minutes.
Okay. Well, first off, I would say what Bishop Peter Story said. He was Nelson Mandela's chaplain in South Africa. He's a prominent South African Methodist bishop. And this all goes back to 9/11, our mean-spiritedness and our feelings of revenge. And he said this right after 9/11. We in South Africa had obvious evils, apartheid, to engage. You Americans have to unwrap your culture from years of red, white, and blue myth. You have to expose and confront the great disconnect between the kindness, compassion, and caring of most American people and the ruthless way American power is experienced directly or indirectly by the poor of the earth. You have to help good people see how they have let their institutions do their sinning for them. Now, I think that captures the thought here. I attribute how Americans have let themselves be led down this garden path is because of fear, the fear of another attack, but also because they've lost their bearings morally. When I was studying theology, moral theology and ethics, there was a category of evil, Gary, that was defined as intrinsic evil, always wrong. Never authorized. That's a famous word down here in Washington. You authorize things like torture. Well, into that category of intrinsic evil fit slavery, rape, and torture. You can't authorize somebody to rape somebody else. You can't authorize someone to enslave someone else. And you cannot authorize someone to torture someone else. Now, I used to say in some of my speeches, look, you know, I'm a follower of Jesus of Nazareth, okay? And he was tortured to death. So I have a special feeling about this. torture stuff. And I was upbraided by an agnostic friend of mine, and he's right. He said, Ray, it's all very nice to brag about your Judeo-Christian heritage, but human beings know that they don't do that to other human beings. I'm an agnostic. I have nothing to do with any religion, but I know that. So lay off this heritage business. It's a human problem. It's a moral problem. Now, who is it that we look up to for moral guidance? It's the institutional churches, usually, or people in moral authority. Now, in Germany, the churches could not find their voice. The institutional churches, the Lutheran Church, the Catholic Church, they went along. They couldn't find their voice, with very few exceptions, Bonhoeffer and some others. Now, it's the same here. I mean, now we know what torture was done in our name. How long is it going to take? Some institutional churches say, you know, this is really beyond the pale. We have to, not in a vindictive way, but in a way of justice, we have to hold people accountable. So those are some of the thoughts that I have on the, you know, on the Christianness of this and on the morality of it. The other thing is what gives rise to these terrorists? Well, very briefly, the way you defeat terrorism is the same way you defeat malaria. You find out, you know, where these mosquitoes breed, right? The swamp where they breed. And then you set up a sharpshooter platoon of sharpshooters, and you try to shoot all the mosquitoes as they leave the swamp, right? Wrong. What do? You drain the swamp. And that's what Pope Francis is saying. There's a swamp of legitimate grievances borne by the poor of this world. And until you drain that swamp, until you address those factors, people without hope are going to do the kinds of things that they did on 9/11. I'm not apologetic for that. I think it was heinous. But you can understand it if you open your mind. And unfortunately, because of the media in this country, and that's the other key factor here, Americans are malnourished on the truth. They don't really know what's going on. And with all this propaganda attending the Feinstein report from the Senate Intelligence Committee, that's all designed to dissuade Americans from reading the report. Oh, it's 500 pages. You don't have to read 500 pages. Just read 5 pages, and your stomach will turn, and you'll realize that if we don't hold somebody accountable, we're not Americans, certainly not in the sense of Thomas Paine and those people who fought so many Christmases ago to turn the tide of the battle and give us 4 years later a free country.
We're out of time. Thank you very much. Always appreciate you coming on and sharing these wonderful insights.
You're most welcome.
Ray McGovern. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Now, in studio New York City is Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I just want to let you know that your listeners are paying attention. I've gotten a lot of emails about people who, based on the shows that they listen to on PRN, are saying that they're completely disenfranchised with our current systems, healthcare, education, the political systems. They realize we're in a corporate dictatorship. They see the downward spiral. And here's what people are asking. They want to know if you have any insights or any update on where we're at for the next election in terms of getting some progressive candidates instead of just Republicans and Democrats.
Yes, we are working vigorously with a large coalition of independent people who had never worked cooperatively in the past. Jesse Ventura, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, and many others. Working together as one. So we believe that that when the time comes, we will be able to have articles, documentaries, and forums, public forums, where everyone is participating who's an independent thinking person towards getting people who will not be compromised, will not serve the interests of those in power, but rather serve the interests of the people. It's happening, and more on it once it's been all cohesively brought together.
Great.
Okay. And also, last opportunity coming up for the regular guests are full, but anyone wanting to come on work study for the health health retreat, which is going to be phenomenal. We're going to have so many classes every day on mindfulness, on healing, on working with homesteading projects. In a work study, you do some work, but you also get to attend classes. Give Luann a call. Give your number, Luann.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Gary, it's shaping up to be a phenomenal group of people, both work-study and our full-pay attendings.
Good. Now let's see if we're going to see the presence of Eutrice Leet at this health retreat. Hi, Eutrice.
Ha!
You'll see me, in fact, before the week is out. I'll be there in the studio.
Oh, great.
Thanks, Gary. Today, Latino Officers Association takes on PBA leader Pat Lynch, and we're talking also about watching their language when information has a mission.
Also, would you address, if not today at some point, the actual number of innocent civilians who were found guilty of nothing at all, who were killed by the police in the last year, and
well,
why there is no outrage,
about that
no
in different ways, but we definitely have that on the agenda because
I believe there are quite a few cases lately. I believe that it's a hypocrisy not to value all innocent life.
And agreed.
We look forward to hearing your program, Eutrice Leet, right now.